like all forms of the medium being told for like visual pictures and stuff and the panels and things. I would say like manga falls under the academic definition of comics and like comic books and like graphic novels. But The Sandman is not a graphic novel because it was not published in that bound form of a book. It was published originally in the individual issues. And that's what makes it a comic, not a graphic novel.
Is it your favorite comic?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello, mortals, monsters, and myth lovers alike. You're listening to Podcast of Poseidon, where we explore ancient myths and their modern retellings by reading Rick Riordan's Percy Jackson and the Olympians. This is Chapter 7, The Furies. I'm your co-host, Anlun from the Hunters of Artemis, Darian Smart. Joining me is my co-host and brother, hailing from Cabin 11, DJ.
How's everybody doing today? Cabin 11 is technically the cabin of Hermes, but no one's claimed me yet, so I'm undetermined. And so they just stuck me in the
cabin.
That's
wild.
And I keep getting my shit stolen. And, you know, it's just a whole thing.
That's wild, because the gods are definitely supposed to claim their kids by, like, what, 12, 13?
I know, and I'm, like, 21 now. Someone's fucked up. It's just crazy. I know. I don't know if I'm too keen on this whole situation.
Yeah, well, sounds like somebody has broken their oath, which is topical for our episode on the Furies.
Woo!
The Furies, also known as the Erinyes, are big players in Percy Jackson in that they are the first confirmed nonsensical Greek thing that tries to kill him. But we only see one at the beginning of the book.
Which is why we waited until we saw
We waited to the
three.
Order until they were all three together, and then they get to hang out. So, DJ.
What's that?
What do you know with the Furies?
Well, I know that they punish. And I know that one of them fucking sucks as a boss in the game.
Here it is.
Fucking, holy shit. I don't even remember which one it's called. Hold on. I'm sure I could figure this out. Give me a second.
We usually wait until the second half of the episode to get into pop culture, but yeah, we'll start here.
Look, man, you ask me questions, you put me on the spot.
Yes, because I don't ask you questions at the beginning of every single episode. There is if you have not figured out the pattern yet, I don't know what we're doing here.
Yeah, no.
It's chapter 7.
Anyway, I'll get to that later. But yeah, holy fuck, one of them sucks as a boss. But I mean, I know they're used to punish, and I know they're used to... Oh man, what is that guy's name? Another character in Hades that was also... He has to push a rock up hills for all eternity, and the Furies
Sisyphus.
Are just whipping his back. Sisyphus! What a Chad. I don't actually know what he did in his life to deserve being tormented like that, so he's probably not a Chad. But in the game... He's really cool.
Okay, I have not played Hades, know nothing about Hades. Look forward to learning all about it during our Underworld episode.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Yeah, that's basically it in the nutshell. The Furies, or the Erinyes, as they're also known, are, to quote their Wikipedia page, are female chthonic deities of vengeance, which is a mood I can personally get behind.
Yeah.
Basically, they are, to confirm, they are goddesses. They're not monsters. They're not spirits. They are actually goddesses of vengeance. Early on in Greek mythology, the Furies were not super well defined. They're more vague entities. Perhaps they evolved, or not evolved, but more from stories about ghosts coming back to like curse or haunt those who had wronged them, like murdered spirits, things like that. But eventually, they were defined as being three goddesses. And much like the Fates, they have names, which I didn't know, or I think I did know and forgot.
Oh, no, they have names.
Yeah, they have names. Of course they have names. They all have names.
Unless that's not what you said. I wasn't paying attention.
What?
My food's here.
Motherfucker! All right, so yes, I was saying that they have names, and I was surprised.
You were surprised that they had names?
Well, it's like the Fates, right? Where I didn't realize they had names, but like, no duh, they have names.
Like, I guess.
I forgot.
I don't know.
Like I'm sure I knew
had,
and forgot.
Again, yeah, I've had like few interactions with the Furies. Mm-hmm. One of them, I mean, being Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
And then, the only other one that's also major is Hades.
Yeah.
And that one has their names.
Obviously. All right. So, DJ, do you want to share the names with...
The name.
Did you know them? Yeah.
Yeah. There are Megaris or Megara, mm-hmm. Alecto, and Tisiphone.
Yeah. Now, do you know what each of them is basically, you know, the goddess of vengeance over? What crimes they are specifically like?
I actually don't know that one.
It's okay. I do.
I don't know. Okay. I think Tisiphone likes to punish murderers.
Yes, you're right. Do you want to take a guess the for... Is it Hades?
Hades, yes, because she only says murder and murderer. And she's the annoying boss.
Okay.
But I'll get to that.
Okay. Do you want to take a guess what Alecto might punish?
Robbery?
Kind of.
Thievery?
She's a punisher of moral crimes.
Mm.
So the example is just anger on this one, and I don't think that's a very good example. Anger, etc. And no. I'm like, we could have had more than that.
Yeah.
Actually, no. So I'm wrong. That would actually, so thievery would actually be Megara. She's the punisher of infidelity, oath breakers, and theft, and Alecto's moral crimes.
Ah, so yeah. That's fair.
Do you remember which of the Furies Mrs. Dodds was?
I don't even remember them bringing up the name.
They
probably did. I believe that they do, but I just don't remember that.
Yep. They do. I can't remember exactly when, but it is on the Percy Jackson wiki, because I was trying to confirm which one she was. She was Alecto.
Ah.
And side note, I'm pretty sure I was calling her Mrs. Dobbs.
Might have been. Mm-hmm.
During our lightning theme.
It's possible. Sure I mean, like...
Mrs. Dodds.
Dobbs and Dodds. Who really gives a shit?
My brain definitely turned those letters around. That's fun. But yeah, Alecto is considered, at least in Percy Jackson, the top or the most trusted of the Furies by Hades. In that makes sense about why she was the one sent to get the helm back from Percy after he was believed to have stolen it. Like, if this was, which is wild because theft, that feels like it would be a Megara's thing, but.
Yeah, it should have been Megara's thing. I mean, but like, if Hades likes one Fury over the other,
there's the most trusted. It's going to be like, yeah, you'll send that one. So when I say the Furies were goddesses, it's important to understand that they weren't like the Olympians. They were older than the rest of the gods. Regardless, and there's two myths about their origins, but regardless of which one you want to use or you want to tell, you subscribe to, like, they are still older than the rest of the Olympians and all of their creations and stuff. One of the legends says that they are the daughters of Ouranos and Nyx. Nyx, obviously, Night. Nyx is often the mother of very, very many of these, like, primordial things. Like, these are the goddesses of vengeance. They are something eternal and deep. Another myth is about, well, we all know Cronos sucks.
Yeah, he does.
But his dad sucked too. His dad was also...
Well, it's Uranus, isn't it?
Yeah, Uranus. He was the, you know, sky god, basically. He also sucked. He was married to Gaia, you know, Mother Earth, literally. But he hated his kids and would just, like, shove them deep inside Gaia. He's like, I don't want to see these kids. And she's like, I'm pissed and I'm done. So she has her son Cronos decide to take matters into his own hands. So next time Ouranos shows up and is like, all right, time for sexy times, Cronos is there waiting and cuts off his dad's dick with a scythe.
I mean, like, my dad kept being a dick.
No. Like, I'm not.
Maybe.
I'm actually, like, on this one, I do side with Cronos on this one. Like, I respect and I'm here for it. I understand. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Very few times will you find us siding with Cronos.
Very few times will you find us siding with Cronos. Now, if your dad is an asshole.
Or even Gia, for that matter. Gia is also kind of a bitch.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot. They're all...
I guess if you live that long.
Eventually. So the blood from the severed peen obviously splashes to the earth, and from that blood, the Erinyes are formed. So regardless of which one, they're older than everybody else, and they don't have to answer to Zeus. Which is great. There's a quote from...
God, I wish that were me.
I wish I didn't have to listen to Zeus.
Wish I didn't have to answer that.
Fuck. Fucking die. Essentially, so in Percy Jackson is very interesting because it actually kind of uses both origins, and I think maybe by accident. Because Nyx claims that she is the mother of the Furies in the book when Percy and Annabeth encounter her.
Yeah.
But in the book Percy Jackson's Greek Gods, which is a great book that I do have, and it is basically Percy retelling the Greek myths, they do use the dick story where they are created from Crotus' blood. Now, I haven't read that one in a while. I don't remember if they, in fact, in this children's book, say that Crotus cut off his dad's dick. They probably allude to it. I don't know if they say it outright, but
I think they say that Crotus just cut his dad up.
Yeah, I think he just chops him to bits, and then from the blood.
Because they've said this, they've said it in The Heroes of Olympus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just chops him up. So he chops him up, but the first chop is the peen.
Let him suffer a little bit before you actually end his life. No, I get it.
No, he's fine. Yeah, he sucked. I get it. I understand. So basically, these, again, like I said, they were goddesses of vengeance. And they're often, they didn't just like appear to torment. They typically were not summoned, but like, and not like assigned really. But if someone had been wronged, they would hear the complaints. As this one article I was reading said, that the task is to hear complaints brought by mortals against the insolence of the young to the old, of the children to parents, of house to guests, and of households or city councils to suppliants, and to punish such crimes by hounding culprits relentlessly. So basically, and what's interesting is that it's not, it's like societal norms is what they punish here, right? Like the way they're being described here is like, insolence against like the young to the old. It's like, oh, respect your elders. That's, and it doesn't, and really take into account like, yeah, but what if the elder's a dick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
of host to guest. What if your guest is an asshole? You need to leave my house. Exactly. I don't care if I like gave you guestship.
Yeah, the way, I mean, like, I guess that makes sense. The way I was interpreting it as like they hear out anyone's, like whether it be like the host or the guest, the young or the old.
Oh,
not. That's the way that I was thinking about it. But
I like yours better.
Is probably the way I meant.
Yeah, yeah, but I like yours better. So, that makes more sense. But they were not to be taken lightly. Like we said.
No, they're fucking Furies. No, they're
Furies. Yeah, like I said, they are older than the rest of the gods. They, you do not want to have them on you. This other quote from a Greek, I believe, poet, Heraclitus, said, "Not even the sun will transgress his orbit, but the Erinyes, the ministers of justice, overtake him." Basically, like, not even the sun is going to fall out of line.
Fuck with the Furies.
Yeah. Because
Helios, he's whipped.
Yeah, because they will show up and they will cause problems. Now, here is where I want to talk about aesthetics. Gigi, what do the Furies look like?
Bats. I mean, like, grotesque anthropomorphic bats, but bats.
Bats. See, that's super interesting because there really isn't...
I mean, that's like... That's what I interpret them as, but I know, like, another... media, they're not really that.
No, but they've got, like, you know, they're hags, they've got wings,
Percy Jackson was also the first exposure to that, mm-hmm. and that's how we described them pretty much.
Yeah,
was like having leathery wings that turned into a black leather coat when they were trying to hide in the mist, you know, shit like that.
Yeah. See, and I do love it. It's a great look, but what's interesting, it's also not really how the Furies, yeah, they weren't super described like that. Actually, and there's not a lot of like concrete description of them because in Greek storytelling, you don't need to remind everybody, and this is what they looked like. You just say they're there and your audience knows what they look like. You don't have to remind them every single time.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
but it'd be nice to like, again, have that baseline. Yeah. If nobody describes what they look like, what the fuck do they look like?
So the point I'm trying to make is like, so there are descriptions of what the Erinyes looked like. And they were said to be those who walked in darkness. They were of terrible aspect with writhing snakes for hair and eyes that wept tears of blood. So really more Gorgon.
Are they just Gorgons?
Yeah, really more of a Gorgon vibe. But when we see them, they usually kind of seem like they're more like harpies. Right?
Yeah.
With that kind of aesthetic. Which,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, isn't wrong, and I think perhaps the reason why they are usually depicted with wings, even though they aren't often described as such, is because of their habit of hounding their culprits, their victims, kind of.
I think they look dope as hell in fucking Hades.
I bet.
Some cool ass design. I mean, they do have like the wing and everything, but they only have one. At least, let's see, yeah. All of them only have one.
Okay.
And they look sick as hell.
So this is like their habit of like hounding their victims, their target, I feel like is a better way of having. And like they will, you can't get rid of them. Like if you are on the Fury shit list, they're going to go after you and follow you like relentlessly to the ends of the earth. And this is something we see in a series, or I guess it's the last of a series of plays called the Orestia, which is by a gentleman named Aeschylus. Basically, the plot of this trilogy is, so you've got Agamemnon, and Agamemnon murders his daughter. Why?
Doesn't sound like a great dude at start.
No, doesn't sound like a great head start.
Not a good start to this guy.
All right. He sacrifices his daughter to the gods to assure good sailing on his way to Troy.
All right. But he's on thin ice.
Well, he was on more than thin ice with his wife.
Dude, he was in hot water with his wife.
Yeah, hot fucking water with his wife, Clytemnestra, who decided that she wasn't super cool with her husband sacrificing their daughter.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit.
So that sacrifice took place in the Iliad. So she and her lover decide that they're gonna just kill Agamemnon? And so then they do. Which, fair. Yeah, no, that seems...
You kill my daughter, I'll kill you. I mean, that tracks.
Fair. Yeah, and so the son of Clytemnestra and Agamemnon is this dude named Orestes. So Orestes decides the only thing to do is to avenge his poor father. So he murders his mom.
I mean, okay. The apple doesn't far from the tree. Like, let's be real here. Like, yeah, the father murders, sacrifices the daughter to the gods so that he could come back safe.
No. He's going to Troy.
That's standard ritual stuff.
I don't think he ran it by his wife beforehand.
Probably not. No, you're right.
I just remember because I know this story.
Did Abraham run it by his wife when he was about to kill his son?
Okay, well, no. We're on thin ice, I would think. Now we're on thin ice. We're just going to step off the ice real slowly. We're going to lie back on all fours, just distribute our weight. And we're just going to slide back like a little slug. Just slide back off that ice. But yeah, I remember this story with fucking Agamemnon. So basically, he tells his daughter, oh yeah, come meet us at the port because you get to marry this great hero.
Oh, so he tricked his daughter.
He tricked his daughter. And she shows up on her bridal stuff, like, so ready, and she meets the guy. I think it might have been Achilles. I don't remember which dude it was.
Dude, if it was Achilles, I mean...
It might have been
Achilles. I would fall into that trap.
No, I think it was Achilles. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, she shows up in her bridal outfit, ready to get hitched to this great hero who is like, hey, yeah, nice to meet you. Has no idea what she's doing there. It's just like polite and like whatever. And then her dad sacrifices her. So we're all a little pissed about it.
Yeah, that's not the cleanest thing to do.
So Orestes kills his mom. And then the Furies, you know, who personify the anger of the dead.
Yeah.
Go ahead and just torment him as he like, and he's like, tries to flee around the world and like nobody else can see them but him in this play. And they're just described as being like terrible, like women, but not women, and dark and all these things. And so they just torment him. So that's probably why they're usually
be a fucking fury in a Greek play, dude. That'd be sick as fuck.
Good gig. Basically, I think that's probably one of the reasons they often have wings, because it's like way easier to torment someone when you can fly. That's like buzzing around, dive bombing you like very angry crows. Sure. Yeah. What's interesting about this particular play is that there's obviously like it's a three-part play. It's a whole thing. We're not going to get into it right now, but just the fury specifically. At the end of this play, Orestes has like gone around the world. Not around the world. He's just traveled and been tormented a lot. And finally he returns to Athens and he seeks counsel to Athena. And he's basically like, I know, I admit that like this was my crime. I did this, but I have lived with it for so long and gone through so much that I have absolved myself of the guilt of it. And Athena is like, yeah, you know, like I didn't have a mom. So I'm just going to side with men on all things. So yeah, I think you're good. And the Furies are like, oh, well, I guess he's good now. And then they suddenly just become not the Furies anymore. The Furies now become the kindly spirits. And they accept, what does Athena say? She promises them, she tells the Furies, oh, you should stop being... Oh, because it was a vote. Okay, so I'm on the thing. So there's a judge, it's a court case. And people vote, and they vote in favor of Orestes. And he's like, yeah, he's a free man now. It's fine. He suffered enough for this.
I mean, how long did he go through life like that?
Okay, but, like, what about the sister?
I mean, that's fair. But, like, a prison sentence for murder is still, like, 20, 30 years. Honestly, it's probably easiest. But, like, 20, 30 years is a long time. Not that I'm defending murderers, all right?
Yeah, I think, well, here's the problem.
I'm just saying mental torment might be a little worse than imprisonment. I mean,
here's
what they're, you know?
here's the real, the core of it is that, like, oh yeah, because Apollo also shows up to be this guy's fucking, like, lawyer. Like, Jesus Christ, this is fuck so yeah, fucking dude. Greek.
Let's go, Apollo.
This is so fucking Greek.
How Greek.
Apollo states that the mother is not the parent of the child, but only the nurse of the new planted seed. There can be a father without a mother. And he tells the court, well, yeah, Athena herself, obviously. And so they figure, and it's not even so much like, oh, the murder and how long has he suffered. It's like, well, did he actually do anything wrong in killing his mom? She did kill his dad. So, like, actually, we think it's fine. We think you don't deserve this. You're fine. Like, you shouldn't feel guilty about it. You actually didn't do anything wrong at all. And the fact that fucking Agamemnon had, like, murdered his daughter just doesn't come up. Just doesn't come up. Because he was totally within his right to do that.
Sacrifice to the gods. Do you think the gods give a shit if it's a sacrifice to them?
A fucking course not. The gods all suck. Of course not. All of them.
Yeah, they do. Here we are. Of course it's not going to come up in god court when it was their sacrifice.
Yeah.
That's probably why the sister doesn't really have much of a say in this. Like, it probably wasn't the sister's soul that was angry. The sister's soul was probably vibing with the gods.
No,
I actually don't know where sacrifices the gods for, but I don't think she'll go to, like, the fields of Asphodel.
I don't know. I don't think you get special treatment for being sacrificed. She didn't volunteer for this.
That's
what this episode is about.
Look, man.
Okay, so basically the Furies are pissed, and I agree with them. Because, again, this isn't whether or not he has suffered long enough, whether or not he served his time. It is, in fact, well, did he actually do anything wrong? And no, the people of Athens decide no, he didn't. And Athena decides no, he didn't. So the Furies are, like, fucking pissed. And Athena's like, okay, well, you can't bring your fury onto Athens because this was a fair trial. But, like, hey, why don't I give you, like, the shining place underground and you can accept devotion from the citizens of Athens and, you know, share in her, quote, ride of worship. Do good, receive good, and be honored as the good are honored. Because apparently the Furies are bad. The Furies that punish those who have wronged and harmed others are bad. The goddesses of vengeance are bad. So then the Furies become the kindly ones, and Athena gives them, she replaces their black robes with, like, new reddish purple robes, and although they still seek vengeance against evildoers, they will now also aid the good people of Athens. So they have also tamed the terrible Furies. If you can't tell by my tone, I really don't like this fucking play.
Yeah.
That's the Furies.
Woo!
Now, we get to talk about the interpretations of pop culture.
And I'm just going to say right here that leading up to this recording, Darren was constantly calling them the Furries.
Oh, you said it in the practice!
Of course I'm going to say it.
I can't believe you undercut me on this.
And I'm going to out you.
I can't believe you undercut me on this.
You're right. But I just found it really funny. And clearly she practiced. She hasn't said it once this entire episode.
I mean, good.
Great job for her. Mm-hmm. But I was waiting for you to fuck up so I could say, yeah, she's been doing that a lot.
No, I was real good.
But since we're going on to pop culture, furries seem to be very pop culture.
Yeah, but that's not what this episode is about.
You're right. It's about the Furies.
Yes, which I have said correct. Do you want me to go back and pretend to say it wrong so you can call me out and we can edit it?
Not at all. No. This is funnier.
It's not funnier for me.
It's funnier for me.
Jesus. All right, DJ, do you want to talk about Hades?
Yeah, I want to talk about Hades. Of course I want to talk about Hades.
All right, it's your turn.
Game is great.
Tell us about Hades. Tell us specifically about the Furies.
I will. For those of you who don't know, who are just, like, tuning into this one episode, What are you doing? Go back and listen to the other, like, six or seven. If you don't want to do that, understandable. There are, like, an hour long each. That's quite a bit of time, but we'd love it if you did. But Hades is a roguelike game available on every console, I think, at this point. And it's just a fun little game about you playing the son of Hades trying to get out of hell, right? And the first level boss, the boss that you go from Tartarus to the fields of Asphodel, are the Furies. And first, the first one you fight every time is Megaris. And like after you beat her, she starts showing up in the main lobby of the area. And like, I think you can court her. Which is
okay.
This interesting. Is, I haven't gone down that way, but you can give like gifts to people. I didn't know that was, which is nectar.
I've just learned something about Hades that I didn't know. Okay.
You can you can give gifts to people. They give you a trinket back after the first one. Then after that, you just increase your standing with them. But you can continue to give gifts, and it's just like a bottle of nectar.
Okay.
And everyone's like, "Oh, fucking word, dude! Nectar!" And they just, or it might be ambrosia too. I don't remember. It's one of those two, right? Like, a lot of the people are like, what, you're giving this to me? Dude, what the fuck? Like, I'm just some lowly dude. I'm like, no, here, you take it. Mainly because I wanted the items. But it's great. And I think you can court Megaris.
Okay.
I'm not entirely certain. But, and then there's, Megaris is like, they all have like their own attack patterns, but kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
Megaris is pretty straightforward. She attacks you and throws projectiles, pretty much.
Okay.
And she's a lot of fun to deal with. And she's, like, the only sane one.
Oh.
She's the only one with, like, I don't know, an actual thought process. Electo is also one of the Furies you could fight.
Mm-hmm.
And hers is a little more annoying. I can't remember if it's actually Electo or Tisiphone. I get the two mixed up a lot. They have, like, similar colors.
Uh-huh.
That's how I determine them apart.
That's fair.
But Electo, I want to say she's the one that teleports you into a cage.
Rude, but go on.
Yeah, and it sucks, so you got to get past her. But it's just so annoying to try to do that. And she's like crazy, constantly wanting to torture, right? She's just like fucking not all there. Ooh. And just like screaming, like doesn't even listen to what Zagreus is telling him. And saying, it's like, hey man, can we just like talk about this? It's like, no!
Yikes.
Just screaming at you. I'm like, oh fuck, okay. And then Tisiphone, as I said earlier in this episode, only says murder and murderer and just those syllables constantly, like murderer, shit like that.
Okay.
And she is just fucking annoying. I can't tell you her attack patterns. I just remember that I hate seeing her. And a lot of the times when you're about to go into that boss room, Zagreus will say like little quips.
Okay.
When he's like walking in, he's like, please be Megaris.
Oh.
And it's like Tisiphone is like, God damn it. God damn it, or something. Like they're like, dang it. And then like sometimes when he walks into the room with Tisiphone, he's like, let me guess. Murder? And she just screams murder.
Oh my god, I don't understand this game. Okay.
Zagreus is like one of the sassiest motherfuckers.
Oh,
I love him so much.
Very excited for this episode.
But I mean, that's all I got on the Furies. They're annoying to fight. And you can get Megaris to fall in love with Zagreus, I guess. I haven't been doing that. I've been going for the maid that's just the head of a Gorgon called Dusa.
Nice.
She's really cute.
Nice. Okay. How do they operate in terms of like the Fury vengeance things? Like obviously
it might even have something to do with, like, their move patterns. Honestly, like, their characters are just kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they definitely, like, cemented what they do. Megaris is, like,
the only sane one. Sometimes, sometimes you see Megaris just in the main area, which is, like, the castle of Hades. And he, like, Megaris is just chilling at the bar. You go up and talk to her, he's like, don't talk to me.
Aww.
And I'm like, I haven't increased my standing with her yet. And I'm like, yeah, I understand. And I just walk away and go talk to, like, Achilles or Hypnos or something like that. It's great.
Really excited for our episode where you and Lucy will tell me all about Hades so I can finally go play it. Because the point of the episode is for me to go in blind and I'm like, I just want to play this game. Like, it just sounds really
fun. The game is great. Like, I can't recommend that game enough, dude. It is so much fun. I mean, the way they attack probably has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll look out for it next time I play it and actually think about it.
Cool. Okay.
But
yeah.
Until then. I don't got an answer.
So let's briefly talk about Ridley Scott's Alien. the movie.
Hell yeah, dude. Fuck yeah. That movie's great.
Yep.
They really, really reference that in that movie?
Yeah. They don't reference the Furies in that movie, but not too long ago, a documentary came out called Memory, The Origins of Alien, which is about, you know, how the Alien movie came about, what went into it, and the director kind of analyzes storytelling and theme and things like that. And he suggests that the Greek Furies are sort of a kind of spiritual, thematic inspiration for, you know, the alien, and that the Furies, you know, hounded those who committed crimes against the, like, perceived societal order of things.
Really?
And so the alien itself is, like, hounding the crew as punishment for humanity, you know, going out too far, stepping beyond their place or their position. I don't know if that was Ridley Scott's intent, but I thought that was a very interesting analysis of Alien and the Furies. Now we're going to get to good stuff. Not that Hades wasn't the good stuff. I had to delay this recording for a little bit because I found an incredible essay that just opened my world.
Hit all the right bones.
Hit just all the right bones. What?
I don't know.
Okay. So.
I mean, like, I've been using that reference a lot at work a lot, mainly because we had a guy come in look at our MR2. Uh-huh. And he's like, man, it's just really nostalgic because this car came out in high school. I'm like, yeah. And then later I'm like, yeah, apparently it hit this guy's nostalgia bone. Everyone's like, oh, that's a weird way to put it. I'm like, yeah.
Come on, I wouldn't say this essay hit any of my nostalgia bones, but...
No, I'm saying it hit all the right bones. Not just...
Okay.
Not the nostalgia bones, but just like... The other bones that like it might have hit, like your Sandman bone, and maybe...
So we're talking about the Sandman. We're talking about Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, my favorite comic, not a perfect comic, not one that everybody would enjoy or should read, but my favorite comic. And we discussed The Sandman quite a bit in our Fates episode, because we talked about the triple kind of goddess deity who, you know, kind of personified the Fates and helped give Morpheus kind of that. The Sandman, if you didn't listen to our Fates episode, is a horror comic from the 80s and 90s produced by Vertigo, written by author Neil Gaiman. It's very good. It's also a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot all the way through. So these characters, the Fates, who are called the Kindly Ones. So right out the gate, you know that they're being framed as the Furies, though they do act again as the Fates by giving Morpheus like visions, predictions, like aid in like, oh, you need to go get your objects of power. Like, here's what you should do. But as I alluded to in our Fates episode, they really are the Furies. They are these goddesses of vengeance, and they are relentless. And so major, major spoilers coming for the Sandman. Like, if you want to read this comic and you don't want to, I'm talking about how it ends. Like, a lot. This is the ending. This is what the series was building to. I'm talking about the ending now. And so maybe you're like, I don't want to read the comic. Netflix is supposed to be adapting this. So this is another, like, spoiler warning for this. I don't know if they're going to follow this. I don't know how much they change. There are a lot of things that they should definitely change for the Netflix adaptation being made in 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
Because it's not the 80s anymore. Hey! So, if you don't want to know, thanks for listening. Don't be like Zeus. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Don't be like Zeus. Bye. Anyway, continuing on.
But everyone else is still here. Hi. Thank you for staying. So, the Sandman. Essentially, what happens is... Oh my gosh, I'm trying to just spark notes this for you real quick, because it is like... Again, it's like a 9-10 volume series. And this is like the ending. Basically, the Furies destroy the dreaming realm and kill Morpheus.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So why do they do that? Well, it is an act of vengeance, right? Okay. So it's a couple things that have triggered it. So first we have this woman. Her name is, I think, Lyda. I don't know how to pronounce it. We're just going to keep rolling by that one. So she and her husband were trapped inside the dreaming. The dreaming is like the dreams, right? It's not to be confused with like the indigenous aboriginal cultures of Australia's idea of dreaming or dream time. This is for the comics. It's like when you sleep and you dream, this is where dreams come from. This is where storytelling comes from. This is where imagination comes from, basically.
Yeah.
So this woman, human woman, I don't remember how, it's been a while, but she and her husband were in the dreaming for a really long time. She goes pregnant and she actually had a baby in the dreaming. The baby is human, but it is part of the dreaming. Things happen, events take place. Morpheus takes the baby. I don't remember why. The baby gets taken. Lita thinks that her baby has been killed, and she's like, oh, okay, fuck you? Fuck you. I'm gonna go find someone to help me, because no one else can help me. You're literally the king of dreaming. You're not a god. You are more than that. You are a, they're, to say, I would say almost like the Furies themselves in Greek mythology. They're he's beyond. The endless are,
yeah.
They don't, unlike gods that need people to believe in them, they don't care. Death, dream, destiny, desire, delirium, despair, destruction. They don't need people to believe in them. They just exist. So what is this mortal woman supposed to do against this literal cosmic force that has taken her child? Well, she goes to find the Furies. And she does. Well, of course. She's like, he's killed my baby. I need, please fucking help me. And they're like, listen, we can't do anything unless he had killed his own child. Like, that's the kind of like moral stuff. We can't do anything. But lucky for you, he just so happened to have done that recently. Jeez. And yeah, so this is a side story, which I will once again find an excuse to talk about
later.
Sandman when we talk about Orpheus and Eurydice. But in the Sandman comic, Orpheus is Morpheus's son. Oh, Dream is also called Morpheus. Did I mention that? Doesn't matter. I'm doing my best here. I'm so excited to talk about the Sandman. Okay.
Yeah, you
so
are.
Morpheus dies, but not really. And his head has been alive for like 1,000 years. He's been like, somebody needs to kill him and he can't die. And he just would like to die, please. So Morpheus finally shows pity on his son and actually kills him. That's enough for the Furies to be like, oh, see, you were doing pity on him, but you're actually not allowed to do that. And you did take this chick's baby. So we're going to use this as an excuse to fuck your shit up. And now I'm going to talk about this essay I found because it is just so good. And it explains, so this sounds terrible, right? Right. Okay. So Morpheus is our protagonist. We follow him through this whole series, right? All the stories like intersect with the dreaming with him, whether, and so you like him, right? You should like him. And so him being killed, him being destroyed, like the realm being torn to bits, it is horrible. It's horrifying. It sounds like it should be a bad thing, but it's actually the best possible ending for what has been going on throughout the Sandman for kind of you. Morpheus is not a good guy. Like, he sucks. We see a lot how he has been horrible to, like, his past lovers, to people, very dismissive, to his siblings. Like, dude fucking sucks. Like, I love Morpheus, but dude fucking sucks. Would not trust him. 10 out of 10 would not recommend. So this essay that kind of captures why this ending is so great. And also, like, why the Furies are so great. So the essay is called How the Furies Got Their Fury Back: Remythologizing the Matriarchy and Neil Gaiman's The Sandman by Emma King. And this is written or posted in May 2016. I don't know who Emma King is. I don't know what this is written for. I found it just somehow. Wasn't even looking up Sandman specifically, just Furies. And I found it. And it's fucking great. King goes in and they talk about how the Furies in this represent... Gaiman does something extraordinary in this. He completely undermines that fucking Orstissus myth. That play, yeah, what happened good. There. Like how the Furies, again, are female deities of chaos, and they have been avenging a woman who was murdered by her son. And the Greeks say, well, that was okay because you killed the father, and the father is more important than the mother. And then that magically turns the Furies into the kindly spirits.
Yeah.
The Sandman does the opposite of that, and quite intentionally too, where the Furies again represent like the feminine. Like we have seen them throughout this because the Furies are not drawn as bat-like harpies or even like the snakes and the bleeding eyes, which like Gaiman is usually really like on point with like the designs, the artists. They usually use very like traditional things. They are designed like we talked about in the Fates. Like they're very much a triple goddess, right? The maiden, the mother, and the crone. That's also like a very deep...
Uh-huh.
Like symbol for femininity, right? For this this trait, the triple goddess, like the, you know, Hecate, Demeter, Persephone, Diana, like whoever, like that's what these represent. So already this anchor to the feminine is in this version of the Furies is what they are supposed to do. And then you have a woman whose baby has been taken from her, looking for somebody, anybody to help her against this man who, again, Morpheus, yeah, he's this ever-ending deity, but he very much identifies as male, is extremely masculine, and often kind of toxic in his behaviors, in the way he has treated women. For example, once upon a time, there was this woman who was a I don't know if she was like the leader or should be the leader of a tribe in Africa. And Morpheus fell in love with her. And she, you know, fled from him and fled from him and fled from him. Because she's like, no, I know what you are. You are beyond a god. And I can, like, this would be bad for my people if we were together. This would be bad for me if we were together. Like, no, no, no. Finally, he's like, no, I still want you. I still love you. And finally, she harms herself with a rock in a very personal place to be like, I am no longer a virgin. You wouldn't want me now. And Morpheus is like, I don't subscribe to these dumb human rules. Like, why would I want you any less? And then she's like, oh, okay. And then they do hook up. And it's consensual. But then she's like, okay. But then she realizes, like, no, 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 this is bad. You're literally the dreaming. Like, this is, I cannot do this. So she kills herself because she's like, this is the only way to, like, be away from you and protect my people. And this is the right thing to do because humans and the Endless cannot combine like this. And Morpheus gets so fucking pissed. He sends her soul to hell. And she was a good person. She was a good leader. She was kind and loving. Yeah. She did this to protect her people and humanity. And he sends her soul to hell for thousands of years. So Morpheus sucks, is what I'm saying. Yeah, I need to really bring this home when I talk about... And this is, again, not all characters are like this in The Sandman. Not all masculine characters are like this. We meet Destruction, who decided he didn't want to do this anymore. And actually, like, just woodworking in the cottage and is the only one who can...
I mean, fucking move.
Yeah, right? He's like, he's this big burly. He's the entity of Destruction, but he's like, I don't want to be that way. I don't have to be that way. And so he, like, just...
It goes on.
He's got this dog, right. And he, like, is the only one who can, like, help take care of their sister who is, like, delirium, who has, like, very much lost herself and, like, not always, like... He's the only one that can really connect with her. So, again, this is not, like, vilifying the masculine. But Morpheus sucks. So he needed to have someone take him fucking down a peg. And that is what the Furies did. And that is what Emma King writes about in their essay discussing how... Hold on. I'm going to try really hard not to just read this whole fucking essay. But, God, it's so good. Let me find one of these lines that I really loved. Oh, shit. Hold up.
Whoa, found something.
Oh, I forgot, and this is important. So this woman who was in the dreaming, who had a baby, her name was Hippolyta Trevor. So it's Lyta, and she was a DC superhero, and her code name was Fury. And she was related to Wonder Woman. She very much was connected with Wonder Woman's stuff. So this was not an accident. It wasn't just a throwaway of, like, why this particular character was chosen for this. Like, it is by design that this is what the Furies were meant for. I'm trying to find... There's this one line that, like, really... So again, the Furies with Lyta are going through and they've just trashed the dreaming. And Morpheus knows he can't stop them. He can't do anything to stop them. And they ultimately kill him. But this is important to know. While they kill Morpheus, the Endless, who is Dream, still exists.
So it just comes a new one?
In a way, there still needs to be a Dream of the Endless. Someone takes up the mantle. In the comics, we did see this before. We learned that there was another Despair. Before the Despair we know now, who this previous Despair, she would describe, like, her mourning and her sorrow is very regal and very, like, that kind of, I've always imagined, we don't see her, but I imagine her as very, like, a Victorian style, Despair and mourning. And the Despair we have in the comics is very different. She is pain despair. She is agony despair. So the Morpheus of the Dream is very, like, harsh and sharp and incredibly dark and very controlling. Like, yes, this is the dream, but it is very, like, this is the way it is defined. So once Morpheus is gone, the new dream becomes Lyta's baby, Daniel, who was not killed. He was taken for other reasons. We won't get into that now. I'm sure one day I will. But Daniel becomes the new dreaming. And honestly, so all of a sudden he's still like a baby. Now all of a sudden he's like this fully grown creation being, but still very young and still very learning, has all the knowledge of dream and of the endless, but is not Morpheus.
Huh.
And so this is important. The consequences of this victory, and this is, I'm just going to quote Kane because, again, they worded it so well. Oh my God, I think this person is my soulmate, to be honest. I don't know. The consequences of this victory are immeasurable. The vendetta is outside the bonds of any civilized legal system, particularly any devised and recorded by the patriarchy enforcing Aeschylus. They seek to punish Dream for murdering his son, a crime he was compelled to do, commit by that same son Orpheus had begged to die. The actions of the Furies are, in this way, unaccountable, seemingly unintelligible. However, they neither care for nor are bound to morals. Morpheus' death had nothing to do with the system of laws of morality. However, it accomplishes not just necessary, but sacred revenge for a desecrated blood oath, but also the brief and meaningful destruction of the masculine paragram, the perfect symbolic world. With Dream's death and their victory, the Conning Ones herald a new era, an era where the masculine dominion of Dream is infiltrated by reality, by the matriarchy and the femininity. The new Dream, Lord of the Dreaming, is of their lineage, the son of the daughters of the Furies, Daniel, Leda's lost child. He is tied by blood in the very connection most sacred of the Furies to the Kindly Ones, the pure embodiment of women, femininity, and the chthonic matriarchal prowess. Not only is Daniel connected to women, but he is drawn androgynously. We see he is inked with curved lines, round cheeks, soft whites, and clear planes, all a contrast to the unforgiving and harsh black lines of Morpheus's gaunt face, muscles, and robes. The Dreaming is therefore imbued with thontic femininity, lashing together symbolism and patriarchy with reality and matriarchy, undermining the patriarchy itself. The unification of masculine and feminine ameliorates any debasement of femininity by the establishment of separate and superior masculinity. The victory is won not just for the Furies, but for all women in Gaiman's story, who, previously limited by their bounds of gender, are uplifted by the dissolution of the boundaries within the masculine, the symbolic paragram of Dream.
Nice.
That's why we retell myth. I would say that is what I want to talk about on this podcast. I think that's why I got so, I knew I was going to talk about the Furies, but even I didn't quite recognize how well that myth was retold and to what end it was done in this book comic that I do love, but didn't recognize the power and importance of the ending. Yeah, it's, oh yeah, Dream, he dies. He's our hero, but he's not. Like, he sucks. He is incredibly, like, toxically masculine in many, many ways. And there are a lot of women throughout the Sandman series who, when faced with the Dreaming, fall. They oftentimes lose, not for their own weakness and stuff, but just because there is no support for them. There is no recourse for them. There is, anytime women touch the Dreaming, it crushes them because it is not balanced. And so with the Furies and these, like, feminine goddesses of vengeance seeking a crime, like a blood oath broken, sought at, like, asked for by a woman whose son and blood was taken from her, like, and for that son to be the one, again, the son of the Furies, to be the one who could really help realign the Dreaming. And we do see that as the Dreaming is rebuilt and we see the way Daniel is drawn. Like, Morpheus is drawn often in all black, black hair, very intense, very sharp. It's a great design. And then you see Daniel and they are stunning. They're always done in all white, white hair, very shiny, very smooth. And it is to show this more balance that it does not have to be one or the other. And it should never be one or the other. You need this, especially in this one, this divine masculine, the divine feminine. And it makes the Dreaming, which is something that in the comics touches all of existence, shows that you need both. And the fact that Gaiman used the Furies to do that is so fucking cool.
Yeah, that does sound pretty sick.
Like, I'm...
And I know I haven't talked at all.
Yeah, but... and I have talked a lot just now, and I'm... I'd like to give you the floor, taken. DJ.
I haven't read the comic. I know you love it, and I've been meaning to get around to it, but I just don't have the fucking time.
I do love it.
But I mean, like, yeah, that sounds like it's really sick, especially, like... I mean, now I know the ending, so, like, what's the point of reading it? I'm kidding.
Well, you could get to the serial killer convention, obviously.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's pretty, it sounds like it's done really fucking well.
It is. Gaiman is very good at this. Sometimes you get to these parts where you're like, this is a little Neil Gaiman-y, and I'm like, okay, this is a little, you did that thing you do, I don't care for this all the time. But, like, oh, God, it's good. That's good. Good Omens, obviously, with him and Terry Pratchett.
Yeah.
I love American Gods. But the Sandman is just golden. God, it's so good. And I want to, with that, because I feel like, because again, like with this podcast, we're talking about the way things are retold and why they're retold and what to what purpose. And I think the way that the Gaiman used the Furies in the Sandman perfectly captures what I'm talking about, where is that it brings so much to retell these stories we know already. Yeah. Like, what that means. If you are someone who, like, knows these plays and knows what happens to the Furies and what happens to, like, Orestes and Agamemnon and all this stuff, and, like, oh, they become... And then you see it twisted, but, like, remixed and turned and mixed like that. That is so much more, and you get the heart of the message so much more. So it's why another thing is like, and I don't want anybody to be mistaken when I say it's important to retell the myths. I'm not saying it's not important to tell the original myths or to learn them and to record them, because if you didn't know that, I didn't know that reading The Sandman, and so I missed what the Furies were actually doing because I didn't know that story beforehand. Uh-huh. Knowing where that came from gives it so much more when you see the way it's being retold, yeah, because you get to, you recognize the author's message so much more.
Yeah, that is pretty sick.
And so I want to, I guess, end on this quote from Neil Gaiman himself, which Emma King used at the start of their essay, which is a thing that, like, when I was reading their essay and I got to this part, I was like, oh, I'm going to love whatever comes next. All 17 pages of this baby.
Oh, heck,
it's double-spaced. It's fine. It's fine.
Woo!
Too often, myths are uninspected. We bring them out without looking at what they represent or what they mean. Pop culture presents us with myth in the simplest sense, a world in which events occur according to story logic, not as they do happen, but as they should happen. But retelling myths is important. The act of inspecting them is important. It is not a matter of holding a myth up as a dead thing, dissected and empty, nor is it a matter of creating self-help tomes. Instead, we have to understand that even lost and forgotten myths are compost in which stories grow. What is important is to tell stories anew and to retell old stories. They are our stories, and they should be told.
Nice.
And that's just, that is right pretty sick there. And if you need to know, well, why is Neil Gaiman your favorite author? Like, that's why. Yeah, and that's all I got. It seems like I feel like I was coming really high and really hot, and I got to come down again. I'm like, how do we end the episode?
Yeah, right? We ended like we do every other time.
All right. I'm kind of DJ. You take this.
Fuck.
Can you take this for me?
I mean, we talked about the Furies this episode. Obviously, it was a lot of fun. We talked about their retellings. I got to talk about Hades. Darren got to talk about Sandman.
Yay.
I feel like it's safe to say it is her favorite graphic novel series.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Well, comic series.
So Dara got to talk about her favorite comic, Sandman, which, I mean, yes, I've been meaning to check out, and you should too, if it sounds interesting, yes, to you. I mean, obviously, we just...
If you're not into horror, you won't like it. It's okay. You don't have to read it.
I mean, obviously, we did just spoil the ending to it, but...
Did spoil the ending.
Well, you know, shit happens.
But it's also been out for, like, 30 years.
There you go. So. It's been out for 30 years, and, I mean, just get to it already, you know? I mean, that's really all I got to say on the matter. Darren, you got anything else?
No, I think I've talked enough. Thank you all for listening.
I know I didn't talk much in that latter half, but I mean, hey.
Fight me. You got to talk about Hades.
I know, right? Fucking got it. God, that game is great. I too am excited about the Underworld episode where I get to talk more about Hades and also Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which the Furies might have been represented in that game too. I just haven't gotten that far.
Yeah, no worries. We'll have a guest who has finished that game and we'll be able to talk
absolutely
about that.
Absolutely. All right. You guys have a wonderful day.
Until next time, everybody, don't be like Zeus.
Don't be like Zeus.
Podcast of Poseidon is created, produced, and hosted by Darren and DJ Smart. It's edited by Darian Smart.
Our music is Athens Festival by Martin Hain. Our cover art is by Audrey Miller. Find her on Instagram at bombshellnutshellart.
Coming out with us on Instagram and Twitter at Podcast of Poseidon. Find all our episodes and episode transcripts at podcastofposeidon.com.
Thanks for listening.